Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson here, chart manager here at the board.
All right, back this week after a week off. Lots to get to. As always, we'll run down the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100. We'll get into a record-setting week for Justin Bieber. Our guest this week is Mark Medina, program director of WHTZ Z100 here in New York, only the biggest top 40 radio station in the U.S., and we'll get really into the mindset of how top 40 radio is run, and we'll close flashing back to, what are we flashing back to, Trevor, this week?
Oh, this week we're going to flash back to 1999, right before the turn of the millennium. We're going to look at the Backstreet Boys and one of their most iconic songs and biggest hits on the Hot 100. And if you thought we were going to leave the Backstreet Boys back in 1999, you'd be wrong, because the Backstreet Boys, believe it or not, in 2017 are still on the charts and have a little significant little rivalry in sync that takes a turn this week that I don't think a lot of people are expecting.
We're renewing the rivalry.
Yeah, but on the country battlegrounds. We're moving from pop. I know. See, even in this room, the guy recording this podcast does not believe this. There is some country brewing history for the Backstreet Boys, and we'll talk a little bit about that.
All right, first, this week's top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Push me to the edge. Phantom, that's all right.
Number 9.
Say congratulations. Work so hard, forgot how to vacation. They ain't never had the dedication. People hate and say we're changing.
Number 8.
Who is that? A minute, just take your time. The clock is ticking, so stay. All you have to do is wait a second.
Number 7. Number 5.
Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Bitch, sit down.
Number 4.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my
room. Number 3.
Poquito, poquito, y es que sabe, y ese es un rompecabezas, pero pa' montarlo a aquí tengo la pieza, oye.
Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito.
And bringing us out of the countdown once again for a sixth week, Despacito, Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee featuring Justin Bieber. So holding down the top spot for a while. We had a quick, some weeks of turnover there. We had Ed Sheeran at the top of the year. We had a couple weeks in there where we were switching out number ones between Kendrick and I'm the One and Bruno Mars. Now Despacito settling in for at least the past month and a half. And I mean, the song, you know, I mean, we say it kind of every week and it's almost kind of a cliche at this point, but it is getting bigger somehow. Yeah. It's not over yet. It's not even peaking yet.
No, it's still gaining in overall activity, and I'm the One at number two, even though it's back up 3-2 this week, it's down slightly in points. So, Despacito just keeps building its lead. Really looking like at this point, it's certainly a good chance it's going to be the song of the summer.
Yeah, of course, it's Despacito. You know, the song that a lot of people thought could be the song of the summer, really, when it first came out, and still, you know, is obviously going to be in the mix. I'm the One, which is another Bieber song with DJ Khaled, and also has Quavo featuring and Chance the Rapper and Lil Wayne. So the supergroup there coming in at number two this week.
In the sky that I won't fly for you. For you. No amount of tears in my eyes that I won't cry for you.
Bieber also on another song a lot of people have been talking about recently, the David Guetta song To You came out on June 9th. Again, featuring Justin Bieber. That song starts at number 16 on the Hot 100, but is the third best-selling song in the week this week. Now, what are the top two selling songs of the week? Of course, Despacito up there dominating once again, and I'm the One is the number two seller of the week. So if you look at the sales chart, Bieber is 1, 2, and 3 on the sales chart, and no one's done that. I mean, in terms of digital downloads especially, no one has ever had that trifecta on lock.
No, we're talking about 13 years now of the digital song sales chart, going back to downloads in the early 2000s. 1, 2, and 3 in the same week never happened before. Artists have had 1 and 2, including Bieber, the last few weeks. He's been 1 and 2 with Despacito and I'm the One. But top three in the same week, that's a first. I was actually looking at who had even come close to that kind of domination, maybe in a similar way. So while no one had the top three in the same week, two other artists, both legends, and it's actually a little bittersweet when we talk about who they are, each had three of the top four in the same week. And say bittersweet because it was Prince in 2016 and Michael Jackson in 2009. It was both after each artist passed.
I mean, of course, obviously, you know, it's kind of morbid to say, but death has a way of reigniting your sales and streams like really no other publicity can. Kind of makes sense. But yeah, I mean, that obviously is a pretty sad thing. I think there are a few other people who have somewhat been in that conversation while they're still alive.
Yeah, let's just look at what both artists did because it was actually really impressive. Prince, 2016, May 14th chart, 2016, he had 7 of the top 8. So not only 3 of the top 4, Prince had 7 of the top 8 songs.
Now, the real question is what song did he not have in that group? And I guess it would have been, let's see, like last year, One Dance was hot last year, but it was probably... No, the Timberlake song wasn't out yet. It was One Dance, wasn't it? No,
One Dance was number 10.
Oh, wait, what? It's not the Timberlake song?
No.
What would have been selling like around the time? It's not Formation?
Yeah, it was Formation.
Oh.
The week that Beyonce Lemonade came out, it coincided with Prince's passing. Of the top 9, 7 were by Prince, 2 were by Beyonce. Hold Up was number 9.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, obviously people have been waiting to buy Formation for months. And as unfortunate a timing as that was, yeah.
And going back to 2009, Michael Jackson, he had 5 of the top 7 that week, 3 of the top 4. He had 10 of the top 17 songs, but he didn't have number 1. He
kind of ran into some Black Eyed Peas, probably.
Black Eyed Peas, yeah. I got a feeling, was number 1, and Boom Boom Pow was number 5.
Yeah, you know, I got a feeling it was inescapable, really, that entire summer, that whole year, graduations or weddings or whatnot, but... Michael Jackson probably, what, Billie Jean leading the pack, or...
No, Billie Jean was number 4. He had two others at 2 and 3.
Really? What would people have wanted?
One might be a little surprising. One probably isn't. One might just be not one you think of right off the bat.
Thriller
was his highest.
People bought Thriller more than they bought Billie Jean. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, and Beat It was number 7. It's not Beat It at number 3. There's another song at number 3.
What would people have liked? Something, what album was it from?
Bad.
It's bad, isn't it?
No, it's not bad.
Oh, it's Man in the Mirror, yeah. Of course. Yeah, I forget people always, you know, that's kind of how people don't remember Michael Jackson as a humanitarian and those kind of things. So interesting that Man in the Mirror would have outsold Billie Jean. That's pretty unexpected.
It was fairly close. It was a Thriller that week was 167,000 downloads. Man in the Mirror was 165. So they were pretty close. And Billie Jean was 158. So they're all pretty close.
Oh, interesting.
All right, so Prince and Michael Jackson did that after they passed, but it's sort of comparable to Bieber in terms of just having a bunch of hit songs in the middle of a hit run. A couple artists have had three of the top six selling songs in recent years before Bieber: Ariana Grande in 2014 and Akon in 2007.
Yeah, Ariana Grande definitely. You know, pretty hot that summer of 2014. She already had her two album singles. You know, Problem was doing well, and then Break Free, I think, was up there, that mix too. And then you kind of throw out the Bang Bang out of nowhere. Is this the right era?
Right? Actually, okay. Problem was not one of those songs.
Oh, really?
It was a little bit lower. It was Bang Bang was number two. Break Free was number four,
yeah,
featuring Zedd. Here's another song you might not remember or think would think that it was such a big sales hit. At least it was this week.
Was
preview kind of a track.
Okay, mm-hmm.
Best Mistake featuring Big Sean.
Oh, Best Mistake. Okay.
Cause if the water dries up and the moon stops shining, stars fall and the world goes blind, boy, you know I'll be saving my love for you. Cause you're the best mistake.
And Akon, let's go back 10 years, May 5th, 2007. Can you name the three Akon songs he had in the top six on the digital?
Okay, one of them's got to be Don't Matter.
Yep, number five.
That's pretty easy. Are they features?
The other two were features.
Oh,
Don't Matter was his.
Featuring Akon? I would not. I'm sure when I hear them, I'll be like, oh, yes, of course, that features Akon. It's not the Gwen Stefani song, is it?
It was. Number six, The Sweet Escape.
Ooh, okay. And what else would have been hot? Bone Thugs featuring Akon?
Yeah, I tried.
Shout out to Akon for holding it down.
Body like a back row, driving with my eyes closed. I know every curve like the back of my hand, doing 15 and 30.
And one other song just outside the top 10, Sam Hunt's Body Like a Back Road, back up 14 to 11, got to number six recently. But history on the Hot Country Songs chart, number one for a 19th week, ties for the longest number one run ever on Hot Country Songs for a soloist, ties Leroy Van Dyke's Walk On By, 1961-1962.
If I see you tomorrow on some street in town, pardon me if I don't say hello.
I mean, you know, in particular, I know some people, when you break a record that is sort of, take it from a newer song, it's kind of one thing. But when you take a record from a song that, you know, is so old that, I mean, everybody from, you know, I mean, across generations would know that song. And that puts it in a great context to really show, you know, how widely accepted a song this is as a hit. I mean, obviously, it's done wonders in crossing over to top 40 and really, you know, helping sort of bring that maybe youth audience, maybe pop audience who you know, at the term country, they might be like, oh, I don't like country. I'm not into country. But, you know, this is the song that can help bridge that gap. And, you know, it's great to see, obviously, Sam doing so well with the song. I can't imagine, I'm not sure, but I can't imagine they thought this would be, you know, this big a hit.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like, obviously, you know, not your typical country song. And, I mean, to see it doing so well, you know, it's great.
Yeah, if it gets one more week at number one, it has the record all to itself. Longest running number one ever on Hot Country Songs by a solo artist. And just five more weeks, it'll tie Florida Georgia Line's Cruise for the all-time record. 24 weeks, 2012-2013. And it will actually have the team on from Hit Songs Deconstructed in a few weeks talking about Body Like a Back Road. Dave from Hit Songs Deconstructed will totally break down why the song is connected so much.
Yeah, and I guess let's kind of help people put this in perspective as well. So Sam Hunt is the top country song of the week, top country song on the Hot 100. Where is the second highest ranking country song on the Hot 100 this week?
It down a little bit further, number 31, Brett Young, in case you didn't know.
Okay, so there's a 20 sort of, I mean, there's a 20 spot gap between the two of them. So if, you know, 5 weeks is, I mean, obviously we've already gotten to 19 weeks, so 5 weeks isn't that much further.
And in case you didn't know, it was on its way down, so it'd be surprising at this point if it were to knock off Body Like a Back Road because it's already peaked. So you actually have to go further. Below that is Hurricane Luke Combs, number 43. That's also on its way down.
And of course, you know, maybe you've also got the Ace Up the Sleeve. One of those songs that, again, you forget about how big a hit it is, that there is no music video for Body Like a Back Road.
Right.
So, of course, you know, if Sam gets a little nervous, maybe you can help some of that streaming out and, you know, put out a clip.
Actually, I won't mention the next biggest country song because that'll give away what we're going to be talking about when we flash back in a little bit. All right, let's get to this week's Industry Insider interview. Mark Medina, program director, he's been there a couple of years, of Z100 here in New York. Went up to Z100 at iHeartRadio recently. Talked about everything to really find out all about how Top 40 radio works nowadays. And Mark's had a great career, started in a smaller market, worked his way up. So really interesting to hear what goes on in terms of the decision-making and the whole process at Z100. Part one, actually, we're going to run two parts over the next couple of weeks. Mark Medina, Z100 Program Director on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Check 1, 2.
New York.
Here we go.
Whoa, put it on.
Hey, it's Luis Fonsi.
Turn it on.
It's your boy, Daddy Yankee.
Justin Bieber here.
Z. 100
New York.
Come and move that in my direction. Thankful for that.
Mark Medina, program director of WHTZ, a.k.a. Z100 in New York, iHeartMedia's top 40 radio station in the number one market by audience size in the U.S. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And for letting us use your studios.
Well, welcome. Make yourself at home. Kick up your feet.
Is this a big deal for you to be doing voice work? Are you ever on the air in Z100?
Actually, I'm not on the air, but I have been the station imaging voice for several of the stations that I worked at. And we did it for a little while here at Z when I first got here as well. There's a sizzle reel that they have that they play in one of the presentation rooms at our corporate headquarters, and there's some VO of me on there doing a station in DC, and so every time I hear that, I like, oh, that was me. Well, that's weird.
All right. Well, thank you again, Mark. Let's just start with what you think the definition is of a program director. How do you define the job, especially for what it is here in 2017?
Well, it's definitely changed a lot. You know, I think a lot of our responsibility is sort of more of a brand ambassador. And sort of an agent for the listener, you know, as the business changes and as the business model continues to change and we're all figuring out what's the future and what, you know, what's this going to look like in a year, 5 years, 10 years. The one thing that holds true is that, you know, we have a consumer, an end user that relies on our brand in whatever form that exists, you know, whether that's through the FM transmitter, whether that's through the iHeart app, whether that's through our social platforms, whatever. So somebody always needs to be an advocate and an agent to that end user. And I think that's a lot of the role that the program director has taken on or I mean, has always had, but it's become more and more prevalent that our job is to service that listener wherever they may exist, you know, whatever, where meet them wherever they are and address their tastes.
I would think for years it was It was really tied to maybe one radio station. You oversaw the music, the jocks. And then in the last 10, 15 years, that's probably when the job has probably changed, maybe more than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what markets you're in. You know, when I was in Phoenix, I had a country station and a top 40 station. So, you know, a lot of that, as things grow and as people grow and as business models and market needs adjust and change, you know, there's a lot of regionalization of kind of what you're talking about, where people have multiple duties across multiple markets and things like that. Here, you know, from a day-to-day radio station standpoint, you know, I have the luxury of focusing on Z100 and then helping out in some other areas with you know, some national initiatives and things like that, and working with stations that just maybe need an extra set of ears or you know, help in one way or another.
Where are you from? How'd you get into music? How'd you get into radio?
I am from a very small town in California called Atwater, California. That's where I grew up. You've never heard of it? This is really random, but the radio station faced a main street that had a stoplight on it. And so it was a top 40 station. It was called KYOS. It was an AM station. And I used to just be fascinated by the fact that, like, if they had the studio blinds open, you could see in the studio. So I'm sitting at the stoplight listening to this guy talk and watching him, like, bobbing his head around. It just seemed like having the best time. And I kind of got hooked on it from there. And I was the annoying kid at the mall remotes, like, that would stand there the whole time and, like, you know, just linger. And I'm sure they wanted to go away, but I would just kind of hang out. And then I did a report in, like, eighth grade on radio, and I went to that same radio station, and the program director was like, wow, you're really into this. And he's like, come in anytime. You know, this is a different time, obviously. And so I started hanging out there on my free time and on the weekends and stuff, and made friends with all the jocks, and they would, you know, hey, I'm going to go have a cigarette. Will you hit this segue for me? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I knew how to run the board and all this stuff, and eventually got hired on as a board op, and like everyone else, you know, ran the American Top 40 with right. Casey Kasem on the Sunday morning and that whole deal. And then just kind of started from there.
So you were pretty young when you started in radio?
Yeah, I was. I did that report. That was in eighth grade. And then back then you used to have to have the FCC license to
right.
to like run the board and all that. So, and you couldn't get that till you were 14. So that no tests, no other requirements. You just had to be 14. So when I turned 14, I got that. Then the radio station hired me, and that's when I started like getting paid to do it, you know?
So it sounds like it was really the allure of radio, but music as well. What kind of music did you like?
I grew up listening to like what would now be considered old school hip hop. You know what I mean? Eric B and Rakim, Houdini, you know, a lot of inappropriate things that I would listen to in my Walkman while I did my chores. And if my parents knew what I was listening to, I would probably gotten myself in a lot of trouble. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because one of the things about being at Z100 is Or even I would say being in New York and being so much more connected to the record industry than I've been at previous programming jobs is, you know, I have a strong passion for the music and I love the music, but I never got into this necessarily for the music, which throws some people for a loop because it's like, well, that's such a, how could you run, you know, one of the biggest top 40 radio stations? So I do have a passion for the music, but I have a passion first for radio. And that's sort of what brought me into it. You know what I mean?
What is it about radio? Do you think, have you analyzed it enough to know what you think is so special that drew you in at such a young age? And obviously still millions of people listen to.
You know, nowadays anybody can kind of become a star, right? With everybody has a platform, whether it's, you know, Snapchat or Twitter or whatever, you know, everybody has that platform and can become a performer, can have a show, can have a shtick, whatever, right? But when I first got hooked on this, that wasn't necessarily the case. So a radio DJ was a celebrity, you know what I mean? They were, and I just thought, what a cool job. Like, they hang out hang out. I mean, I know definitely there's more to it now, but at the time, like, they hang out at the mall, like, eating, like, Orange Julius food and, like, people coming up to talk to them and in line to talk to them, and they're playing music. And, you know, it just seemed like a cool job, you know. And then as I got into it more and got deeper and deeper into things, then I just kind of fell more in love with it. As I learned more about it, I wanted to know more about it, you know.
Just take us through your career. How'd you work your way up to Z100 here in New York?
Okay. So, like I said, I got hired on as a board op when I got that big FCC license that I got to put in the book on the back wall with everyone else's. So I felt special.
Right.
And, you know, literally my first real, like, big moment in radio, I was running the board. I was an overnight board op. And once an hour, I got to pot up the mic and say the legal ID live, and pot it back down, and that was it. And that was my big thing. Eventually went on the air there, and this was at KHTN in Modesto, and did nights there. And then I went to Stockton at KWIN and did nights there. And then I got into programming. I got into programming first at KRQ in Tucson. That was my first program director job. So after Stockton, I went to Tucson to KRQ and worked with Tim Richards and the team there. And, you know, looking back, like, that was a real instrumental time for me, because, you know, you've got Tim Richards was our program director. Who's back in Phoenix now, but went on to Detroit and Chicago to program and stuff like that. And Mojo was our morning guy, who's in Detroit now. And Jeff Dollar, who's doing a show in Atlanta, was the morning show producer. It was just my first kind of, like, real radio experience, I felt, you know. So I went from there to I had two runs there, actually. I was there, then I went to KKFR in Phoenix when it was Power 92, and I was the music director there and the night jock. And then came back to program KRQ. Then I went to program KZZP in Phoenix, and I did that for 10 years. The last three, I also took on the country station KNIX. And then I went to Washington, D.C., WIHT. And then just a little over 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I came here.
People hearing all these different formats, they might think you have to be an expert in country, you have to be an expert in pop. But is programming pretty much for whatever format you're working in?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you get to a level where it becomes about the reps. You know what I mean? Like I use a sports analogy. You know, when you're playing Little League, you kind of play every position, and you learn a little bit about pitcher, and you learn a little bit about first base, and you learn a little bit about the outfield and how to hit and how to be. You might play a game at catcher, but then as you go up in levels and you get to high school and college, you zero in on what your position is, right? And then you focus on the intricacies of that position. So you're not just playing that one inning, one game at catcher. That's all you do all day long is drills for catchers and you know that type of thing. I kind of look at it the same way. Like, I have a general radio knowledge from the foundation that I came up with, but at this level, it's sort of like, you really got to sort of specialize, I think. But that doesn't mean that you can't be involved in or add to the conversation about other formats by any means. Because a lot of, you know, look, it's connecting consumers with something they might like in your product. And that's the same no matter if it's country coming out or if it's top 40 or if it's hip hop. I mean, I didn't even know what a mainstream top 40 radio station was until... I definitely never worked at one until I got to KRQ in Tucson. But, you know, I grew up in the Central Valley, and it was all, like, rhythmic based, you know. When I got a cassette tape of Kiss FM in Los Angeles in, like, the late 80s, early 90s, maybe, that was my first exposure to, wow, you can play – okay, so you can play Red Hot Chili Peppers and – you know, MC Hammer or whatever it was at the time. Like, I'd never really experienced that. And that was a really cool thing.
Does it ever hit you? I know obviously you, have such a background and so much experience at this point. But maybe when you first got the job, was it intimidating at all, or did you take that moment to think, "Wow, I've made it to Z100"? It's like that scene in the Howard Stern movie when he goes across the bridge. It's the big life moment.
You know what? I think about it every day, and I've had this conversation with the staff here, and everybody to a person will tell you that they still every day go, "Wow, you know, look around. I work at Z100," and I think that that's what helps keep everybody on their game and on their edges. Nobody takes it for granted, you know. When I first got here, I didn't quite know what to expect. I'd worked with Mo Bounce a little bit in the past through some voice tracking things on some stations I was at, but hadn't really spent any time with anybody. And the coolest part about starting here was that there was no ego. There was no attitude. I thought, you know, who knows what I'm going to walk into? And it was nothing. Everybody was so great. And I thought about it and I'm like, you know, they're here. They're here. Nobody has to puff out their chest. Nobody has to try to big league you. They know what they did to get here and they're here. Nobody takes it for granted, but also nobody throws it in your face either. You know, it's hard to describe, but yeah, there's definitely a reverence for the call letters, for the heritage. You know, I have such tremendous respect for Tom Pohlman, and really anybody that's ever been involved with the brand, but especially in its resurrection, in the, you know, mid-90s and what Tom and Sharon built and, you know, I'm here to expand on and continue. So,
and you've been here since what?
January 2015. Okay. So 2 full years and wherever we're at now, what's today?
All right, let's get into one of the main questions whenever we talk radio. Radio's place in today's world of music consumption, big stat that Nielsen has always put out there, I think in 2015, is that 243 million people listen to radio in the U.S. each week. How does radio stay relevant today, Mark? I'm guessing it's not just that radio, the actual physical radio, but a lot of online, a lot of app listening. It's sort of, as you were saying before, the entire brand.
We can look at it as the content delivery business in whatever form that takes. I mean, that's the genius behind, you know, the early start that we got in our company with the iHeartRadio app, is that in a way it's like, okay, we see this coming, and so we're not just going to provide the content, we're going to provide the actual new radio, so to speak. So I think that that's a lot of it. Radio remains very relevant in new music discovery, which, you know, presents great opportunity and great upside.
And maybe this is New York-centric to think this way, but with so many people listening on their phones, through the app, what is the future, or at least what you think, Mark, of radio towers and the actual traditional medium of radio?
Well, look, I mean, there's no doubt that digital and mobile is continuing to become more and more prevalent and you know, but right now for us, you know, 90% of our listening is still done on terrestrial radio. So I don't know. I always kind of harken back to the list of things that were supposed to kill radio, you know, starting with television, you know, starting with satellite and then going to satellite radio, then the iPod. And you know what I mean? We sort of have withstood a lot of challenges. And I think that the future really is less about the platform, because who knows? I mean, if I could answer that question, I would be wearing a lot nicer clothes and, you know, driving a lot nicer car. But I think that what it really comes down to is the content, you know, and the advantage of radio as it stands today, as I see it. And if we navigate the course correctly, the advantage that we will always have is the personalities, you know, is the human touch. It's the connection that we can make to a listener that a streaming service can't. You know, Bob Pittman, who's our CEO, often will talk about a playlist being equivalent to your record collection or your CD collection. When you want to unplug from the world and just be in your space, in your mindset, then you would go back in the day to your records or CDs or tapes or whatever. And now you go to your playlist. But when you want to plug in and engage with the world and interact and feel like you're part of the community and part of something going on, that's where the live radio aspect comes in. And that's sort of the beauty of what we have with the app, is that we have the streaming services, we have the playlists and the on demand and those types of things, but we also have all the radio stations on there, which is really how people can connect through the human touch, you know. And the same thing goes with music, you know, when we're deciding what to play and what to, you know, what the rotations are going to be on the radio station. There's tons of data points that we have, and those are very, very important. But so is the human curation and just, you know, oversight and that human touch of, you know, here's what my gut tells me, you know, that is not gone. And I think that's something that you can't really get from algorithms, you know. I mean, you can get close on some things, but I just think that human touch, that human curation is so important. And so whatever the technological future is, I don't know the answer to that. But I think that content and humanity will continue to be in demand.
So like someone who has grown up more in a streaming age, streaming is all about on demand. And maybe you just learn to listen to music without personalities through playlists online.
Yeah. And again, you know, don't get me wrong. That's not to say that there's not a place by any means for, you know, a global platform or a broader net. Like we have a kind of a mantra in the company, which I love, which is national reach with local activation. I think that's really one of the differences, is that, you know, we have the resources as a company to put together some pretty incredible things and then engage with the local listener under the local brand for whatever market that we want, tapping into that to that national reach, but activating locally. And I think that's unique to our company, and that's something that like Apple doesn't have, is they have the national radio station, but people don't fall in love with like platforms, right? They fall in love with humans, they fall in love with people, they fall in love with brands that they're passionate about. And that's one of the advantages that we have also, is that we have so many brands across the country that people love and connect to and fight for and want to be part of and grew up with and so on and so on. We have enough resources to nationally pull together and get some really, really major things done, but then use those local connections and that local branding opportunity to really activate it and have people feel like they're part of it because it's coming to them from their, you know, their trusted companion, which is the radio station.
You talk about local versus national. I know Elvis Duran on the morning show, it's syndicated, but it's still very New York centric in a lot of ways. A lot of the conversation is about things that are happening that day in New York, whether it's the weather or events. And I would think it's, in some ways, it's kind of like maybe Saturday Night Live, where people are watching it around the country, but it still feels very personal to you because of those details. And it's, you sort of feel like maybe you're there with them. It kind of brings you there a little
bit. Yeah. A couple things. I think it comes back to content is king, right? Like Elvis does an amazing show and it's super entertaining no matter where you happen to be listening. And I think that probably, you know, we can get in our own way a lot by overthinking. Okay, well, should I talk about this? And, you know, interesting things are interesting things, you know. Also, and this may or may not be true, but as somebody who's not from New York in me that now is here, I think there is a little bit of a mystique about New York City and what, you know, how could anyone actually function there and live there? So I think he humanizes the city a little bit by, you know, just talking about a restaurant, something that happened at a restaurant, you know, and no matter where you live, you've gone to a restaurant and this one happens to be, you know, in New York City, but it's still relatable, you know? So I think his landmarks and frame of reference is very New York in some cases, but the relatability is not, you know, limited to just New Yorkers. You know what I mean? It's not all, you know, man, the 6 train was just late again today. You know, it's not like that. So I think that speaks to the content and the entertainment value, really, you know?
Let's talk radio music a little bit more specifically. Do you still think, Mark, radio is the ultimate decider of a hit? And I say that because certain songs can sell or stream really big for maybe 1 or 2 weeks, and then maybe that buzz disappears. But if you're a top 10 radio hit or a top 5 or number 1, that's really months of people saying they like that song. You don't get to be number 1 for 1 week on radio and then disappear. It's a much more steady arc. Where do you see radio's place as sort of is it more that steady gatekeeper of what a hit is?
You know, I think that's one of the things that's evolving. You know, 70%, I think, is the latest number of some of the research say that they still get new music from their discovery comes from the radio. There are definitely more and more platforms, and however many exist right now, when we finish this podcast, there'll be 10 more, right? So I think radio's a vital role, but I also think that as with, you know, we talk about millennials and people growing up without a radio in the home and things like that, there's going to be soon a crop of artists that are under the same sort of circumstances, right? There's people that will have grown up and never not had Snapchat in their life or whatever. As that all evolves, radio's role remains vital. Right now, I think that brand new artists and brand new projects, the labels have gotten more and more sophisticated and more aggressive about utilizing multiple platforms to get the music exposed and build, you know, that groundswell. But I think most record executives would tell you still to this day, and most artists would tell you that getting played on the radio is an end goal. Absolutely.
I think you found a balance in some ways. New music discovery can mean new artists, but it can also mean new songs by established artists.
And absolutely.
For a while now, for a few years, right? iHeart Z100 has been really good about playing brand new songs hourly on the first day they came out. That's something I didn't really see in radio too much before that.
Right. With the iHeart World premieres, they've really helped set iHeart stations apart as leaders in that. And not everybody's going to love every song, but they've come to be able to count on the radio station to deliver it for them and let them make the decision. You know, and that's really what all this is about, is like, we're going to match you with this product and in this case, music, and let you decide. You know, that's really what it's about.
With real time personal people meter, are you on those days when you play a new song every hour? Are you watching the reaction every hour and seeing if people are dropping off every time you play it or
no,
liking it?
I think you can get yourself really paralyzed by doing that. Some things you have to do for the brand. You know what I mean? Like, some things are tactical, some things are strategic. And I think something like the iHeart World premieres are a little bit of both, but really strategic. They're really, we're going to do this and own this position and own this expectation and meet this expectation for the greater good. And, you know, do all those songs go on to be number one hits? No, you know, but the image win is probably more important in the long haul. People, you know, I think one of the mistakes people make about PPM as programmers is they forget that top of mind awareness is still a crucial element. You know, like, obviously top of mind is the sole goal in a diary world, but you still have to be top of mind with people. Nielsen, at one point, when it was Arbitron, they said, you know, you have to win the off before you can win the on, meaning that people have to know to put your radio station on before they can continue to listen to it. They have to start listening to it, and that's brand awareness, and that's top of mind. And so I think things like the world premieres help brand equity and help build that top of mind awareness, you know.
C100.
WHTZ.
Newark.
New York City.
And iHeartRadio station.
From the top of the Empire State Building, this is New York's number one hit music station.
C100. New York.
All right, part one with Mark Medina, program director of Z100. You were so in awe of Mark. Trevor, we didn't hear a word from you in that interview.
I know. It was like I wasn't even there. I mean, I was so present in the room and the attention. I mean, what can you say?
Me too. I apparently said so much. You just wanted to listen to both of us.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead and give the real disclaimer to the audience. Unfortunately, as we were recording this interview, I guess you could call it a technical malfunction, if it even functioned. The microphone that I ended up using, unfortunately, did not capture, you know, my voice at all. So for some people who are listening to this podcast are saying, oh, God, thank God, if only this could be a regular occurrence. But unfortunately, yeah, that's what happened. So luckily for me, I got a great co-host in Gary who was able to take that over, ride with it, and luckily, you know, Mark still gave us some great stuff.
Well, you know what it was, too? Apparently, the microphone you were sitting at in the production studio was the one that recently Justin Bieber had sat and done an interview with.
The Bieber mic had a little weird, like, there was something that he kind of described about it that was like Bieber was having some sort of problem with it when he was there, too. So, you know, if nothing else, Justin Bieber and I have now had a bonding experience, so that's all I can really ask for.
All right, we'll pick it up next week with Mark and me and Trevor in spirit with more. But flashing back right now, 1999, Trevor.
You are my fire, the one desire. You are.
I want it better. Yeah, so, okay, of course, if you grew up between 1987 and 2000, you know this song was one of the major hits that everyone from, you know, school dances to singing in the car to any sort of school contest you had. I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys. Gary's looking at me like he doesn't believe me.
No, I'm thinking some of us were working by then. Some of us weren't in school in 1999. Some of us had graduated a few years before.
That's true. You missed out on the golden opportunity. Teen pop, if you were in school right then, that was a match made in heaven. But yes, the Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way, probably definitely one of the most iconic songs of that era. And Backstreet Boys were on top of the world back in 1999. They were really, you know, this is right before, right in the middle, I guess, of the infamous NSYNC Backstreet Boys war, you know, NSYNC next year having No Strings Attached, and again, Bye Bye Bye, It's Gonna Be Me, another huge, you know, huge millennial anthems, if you want to call them that, you know, really reigniting that contest. And I gotta ask you, Gary, because everyone who grew up in this time has their clear choice, are you a Backstreet Boys guy or are you an NSYNCer?
I honest answer, I don't know that I actually ever took sides. It's not – boring answer. Now, see, when I grew up at that age, for me, New Kids on the Block were the big boy band. They didn't have really rivals at the time. They were from Boston. I was from Boston and kind of like their – I thought they were really good pop songs. So yeah. Can my answer be New Kids on the Block?
Coppa. Okay. You can say that. We'll give that to the Backstreet Boys then. For their New Kids Backstreet Boys tour they did a couple years ago. And speaking of Backstreet Boys staying active recently in the music scene, believe it or not, people will, you know, be surprised that, A, yes, the Backstreet Boys are still out there recording music. And even in 2017, they are still making some waves on the Billboard charts. So we're talking 18 years after, you know, this I Want It That Way, their heyday. You can find the Backstreet Boys on, of all places, on the country charts. They've taken a residency up there helping out Florida Georgia Line most recently with the song God, Your Mama, and Me, which is up this week, Gary, to number 2 on the country airplay chart.
Right, so this is where we're talking about the rivalry. Before, Backstreet Boys do something this week that NSYNC never did. So NSYNC had people may not even remember, NSYNC had a number 3 country airplay hit in 1999. They were featured on Alabama's God Must Have Spent a Little More Time on You, which was originally a hit for NSYNC.
Yeah.
It was such a big hit. We've seen this before in country and pop music history, covers in country of pop hits, covers of pop hits both ways, All for One with their songs. John Michael Montgomery did I Swear, I Can Love You Like That, same kind of thing.
Obviously, Dolly and Whitney bringing up probably the most famous country cover in history.
Right.
I Will Always Love You. And as you were saying.
Yes. So God Must Have Spent a Little More Time on You, 1999 on Country Airplay, got to number three, big hit. But this week on Country Airplay, well, they both have God in the title.
That just hit me too, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
God, Your Mama, and Me was number five last week on Country Airplay. This week, it jumps to number two. So Backstreet Boys now have a bigger Country Airplay hit than NSYNC ever did. Number two versus number three.
And, I mean, how crazy would it be if it goes to number one, the Backstreet Boys having a number one hit on country radio in 2017.
Right.
What a weird but great sort of additional chapter to that story.
Did you know about this, Trevor? Weird Al Yankovic did his parody of I Want It That Way.
I don't.
eBay. We got to close with that.
With eBay?
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to Weird Al, yeah, we're going to shout out the Backstreet Boys. 20th anniversary this year of their U.S. debut in 1997.
Right.
The Backstreet Boys album coming. So 20 years later, you can still find them hanging out on the Billboard charts, making big waves, and that much closer to a number one.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens next week. That would be pretty fun if Backstreet Boys are number one 20 years later on the country charts.
In the meantime, we're going to leave you guys, as promised, with Weird Al's parody of the Backstreet Boys song. Join us here next week on Trabi Podcast. We'll be talking Despacito once again, seeing if that train keeps going. And maybe even a big debut, potentially, from this DJ Khaled, Rihanna, Bryson Tiller song, right. Wild Thoughts, seems to be off to a pretty good start. People are gravitating towards it. Already debuting on a few radio charts, we saw, with just 3 days of airplay. So it's been the summer of Bieber so far, but maybe Rihanna is starting to make her move.
If anything, too, with Rihanna, if that song's a big hit, maybe we'll see a female artist somewhere high on the Hot 100 again.
Leslie Acaro once again holding it down for the women on the chart with Zed and the song Stay.
And more with Mark Medina from Z100 next week as well here on the Billboard Charpy Podcast. Don't outbid me on eBay now, Trevor.
I wish my salary would allow me to.
eBay, tell me why I need another pet.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time.
The world's best converting checkout.
Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.